Here's something I find quite fascinating, on a level beyond most things I describe as fascinating. So, if I went around tomorrow and asked 20 random people to tell me what ISIS is, I think it'd be fair to say 20 of these people would likely tell me that ISIS is a terrorist group, an internationally recognised, highly feared and intensely loathed movement that's brought the world death, destruction and in many ways changed the way we live our lives. So whether that be, you know, forced on us through extra security at airports, large gatherings, or simply the way it's just instilled hatred and fear in so many people around the world. But here's the thing. When you Google ISIS, as I did today, here's what comes up as the top stories. So I'm just going to do the headlines or snippets of the top articles. Across the top, under top stories, Egypt is in trouble and not just from ISIS. That's from the New Yorker 10 hours ago. ISIS raised stakes with Egypt mosque attack. That's NBC one day ago. And then it goes on. There's other similar articles. And then directly underneath that is Wikipedia. Now, Wikipedia, regarding ISIS, says, classical Egyptian period. ISIS is a goddess from the polytheistic, I've probably said that wrong, pantheon of Egypt. She was first worshipped in ancient Egypt religion and blah, 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 blah. The next article is Egypt's in trouble and not just from ISIS. Same article as the New Yorker. And then under that, ancient Egypt gods, ISIS, ancient Egypt online. Right. So why is it that so few of us respond without ever mentioning the Egyptian goddess ISIS? I mean, you don't get to the top of Google if there isn't a bloody big awareness of you. And when you think about how long we've known of today's ISIS, unfortunately the ISIS we know too well, who has changed so much about Western culture and our sense of peace, it's only been a decade or two at best. And yet this other ISIS has been known since approximately 380 BC. Is it not fascinating that this ISIS still shows up in Google and yet so few of us in the Western world even know who she is? It's time, I think, we got acquainted with the real and easily the most historically famous ISIS.
Hi, I'm Alana Fairchild. I'm a spiritual guide, a writer, singer, dancer, and lover of life.
So I'm very excited because I am a big fan of ISIS, and you've got to be so careful about saying things like that because, as I just described, you didn't hear in my little opening spiel that that I find it quite fascinating that there are two famous ISISes in the world, and unfortunately for us Westerners, we only seem to know the terrorist group. And today I would like to promote the more famous and the ISIS that's been around for thousands and thousands of years. So you have done this, you've done a couple of oracle decks on ISIS, and I have both of them, and I want to talk about them a little bit later. But I want to hear from you. Of course, I've, you know, Googled, I've actually been to Egypt, and I've heard my tour guide, at least, version of what ISIS is. How do you describe ISIS?
Well, I mean, for me, she's very much about the power of love and optimism, which I think is so important. And the thing that I love about her that really resonates, I think, for the modern age is that she teaches us a way to deal with negativity and challenges, especially when they're quite vengeful or quite personal, and really sort of trying to undermine us in such a way that we don't sort of sink down to the level of, you know, the attack, but can actually respond to it intelligently and not just sort of, you know, maybe in a fluffy way try to love it and light it and then end up in hot water. But, you know, she's actually quite a practical energy. So I'm very passionate about that side of, you know, her mystery tradition and how relevant it is.
Well, I'm going to throw a few examples to you later of how we use that energy that you've just described to tackle darkness. But from a historical point of view, I mean, I roughly feel that Isis was around, you know, 300 or 400 years before Christ, and she is part of the many gods that were worshipped around that time for I don't know how long, but of course, the you know, many Egyptians would still worship her. Can you just tell me a little bit about the mythology story around Isis?
Yeah, I mean, she's amazing. She's a really complex being. So on the one hand, you know, she's known as the queen. You know, she was the queen of Egypt with Osiris by her side. And then sort of there's this other aspect to her where she was essentially like a magician. She studied kind of the, I guess, our modern day equivalent would be, you know, a full-on New Age spiritual path. Yeah. But one of the things with her, which I really quite liked, is that in order to gain her power, she was quite cunning in a lot of ways. She was pretty smart. So there's this story that, you know, she kind of tricked Ra, the sun god, to kind of reveal some of his secrets to her. And she did it in a way by saying, hey, you really need me to heal you in this situation. And she, you know, gained quite a lot of influence. But it was done, you know, not for self-serving interest. She actually uses her powers for healing. But she wasn't afraid to kind of work the system, you know what I mean? Which so, I think is something you have to remember.
Yeah, well, you know what? She sounds like a modern-day hustler, which...
Yeah, a holy hustler, yeah.
Yes, yes, a holy spiritual hustler. So, which, you know, I can now see why she resonates with me. I reckon I'm pretty good at hustling as well, and I am also very spiritual. I don't know about holy. I definitely don't think I'm very holy. So she was part of this, the god, you know, there was multiple gods and goddesses that were worshipped in Egypt around that sort of BC time. Mm. But like, I guess, Jesus, where, it, you know, apparently he was a real person. And then, of course, you know, once he dies and is resurrected, there's all of this sort of, you know, stories that sort of transcend the physicality. Are we saying that Isis was a woman, or was their story? Were the stories always really just symbolic in terms of trying to give us, trying to give people lessons about how life works?
Look, I think you'd probably get different answers to that based on different perspectives, but I can tell you from my perspective, I actually consider her to be a real being. I don't have an opinion about whether or not she actually walked the earth as a human being. I've never necessarily, you know, ascribed to that belief, but I do feel that she's a divine goddess and a living, very real being in her own right. And the stories, you know, whether we want to call them myths or mystery tradition stories or ancient wisdom, but they do have a symbolic aspect to them. But I do actually feel that they were played out on kind of a spiritual level of existence, which is, you know, kind of almost like it's running concurrently with what's happening on the physical plane. So to me, that's still very real, even though we do kind of need to access it in a more subtle way. You can't always see it and know it with your five senses like you do the physical world.
Yeah, and look, I can understand what you're saying, and I can also understand people thinking it's quite complicated to understand what, not just Isis, but any gods or goddesses of ancient times. You know, it's like, okay, so there was a story about this and a story about that, because it's not necessarily the way we think, and we don't have so many stories. We've got sort of, you know, half a dozen strong, bigger religions. But what I do think is really important about Isis, whether anyone's heard of her or not, is the fact that, you know, we are talking about a goddess, which is female energy, and we are living in very, very special times as women. I think there's, you know, this real reclaiming of power, and there's a, you know, a shift in so many parts of the world from what's been, you know, for hundreds and thousands of years, a patriarchal society. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on a comment I I heard regarding Isis, and it said, contemporary women have no goddess knowledge to draw upon. Let them look at her and know her as queen of their search, who will take them, wrap their hair in a scarf, and go out looking with them. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's lovely. I think that the goddess energy, you know, and if you're drawn to ancient Egypt, Isis is just so beautiful, you know, her whole mythology around being able to use love and a relentless kind of inner drive where she just, no matter how bad things get, no matter how impossible they seem, that sort of one thing after the other that happens to her really kind of, you know, destroying the things that she loves, but she just keeps going and refuses to give up until she actually obtains this kind of breakthrough. So, I mean, that is an ancient story, but with really modern relevance. But I think, you know, we have this goddess energy within us. We sort of maybe need a bit of a language and sort of some role models. You know, I think in times gone by when that sacred feminine energy was much more prevalent in sort of day-to-day interactions, you know, there were mystery schools and, you know, if you're in Greece, you had the, you know, the mystery plays with Demeter and Persephone, and it was sort of more part of our lives. And I think, you know, unless you want to use the Kardashians, you know, no offence intended, to, you know, as your kind of goddess role models, you really, you need to look at it kind of more deeply. And I think the beautiful thing with goddess energy is you can choose what works for you. You know, like what woman on the planet is one thing? It just doesn't exist. So, like with the, you know, we're many things. And I think with the goddess energy, Isis in particular, she kind of has this energy of being, you know, the wife, the queen, the lover, the mother, the healer, the rebel, you know, the warrior. She has all of these factors. And I think for a lot of women, you know, the idea of this beautiful feminine being that's respected, you know, by so many people for what she is, you know, she doesn't have to try and be sort of like a man, and, you know, men have their own really important role to play on the planet, but sort of women do as well. And I think there's something in the goddess energy that's really encouraging for women to find their own voice and their own place and just really kind of take delight and find some power in just being a woman and being in the feminine, because it's a truly blessed and amazing and quite powerful way to be.
Yeah, and I think also I think there's a real opportunity for women to, as you described with Isis being all of these many, many, many different facets, that women need to reclaim a lot of those parts of themselves, because I think that they're, you know, that a lot of those have been stripped away in history in terms of you have to fit into one box. I remember even, you know, doing FM radio, and my boss at the time said to me, "You have to choose which female you are." And I just went, "Yeah." Oh my God, it was just awful. And then he gave me two examples of female radio presenters that I had to choose. I had to choose which one I wanted to be, and he was saying, "Well, because you're single, you should probably be this one." And she kind of would play up the whole desperate and single and all of that sort of stuff. And I thought, I don't want to be that. Like, I already probably feel panicky that I'm not going to find love. Why the hell would I want to put that out to the airwaves? That's about as sexy as, you know, a smelly old sock. Like, why would I want to do that? Anyway, so I you know, getting back to the point, I think that there does need to be, you know, some mentors of what is a goddess, and that is about so many different facets of being a woman. And I also do think that, you know, that there are lots and lots of men in the world that are also goddesses. They just might have happen to have different genitals, but they are incredibly goddess-like because they've obviously got, you know, their feminine side is a lot more prevalent than the male side. But when did you get to, like, at what point in your life did you decide, I need to write this, you know, and produce this oracle deck on Isis? You know, what did you think, how did it come to you, and why did you think it was important at that time? Well, because it is, but why did you know that?
Yeah, I think, like, for me, any of those kind of turning points in my life that have involved the feminine, the sacred feminine in some way, including the Isis Oracle, have always kind of, without sounding like a victim, because it didn't feel that way, but sort of happened to me. Like it's, you know, something in my life has kind of unfolded, or I've been taken into quite a deep challenge, or really needed to find myself in an authentic way to be who I am in the world, because there are many people like that guy you worked for that want to tell you, you know, whether it's through advertising or whatever, you know, how you're supposed to be, what your options are. And I just have never really done well with that. Never really
done well with
what to do and how to be. And so, you know, with Isis, it was interesting because at that point in my life, I was really going through some challenges around what it is to be empowered. You know, if I didn't want to sort of, especially I think when you talk about corporate or people that are working in, you know, maybe quite sort of masculine ideal dominated industries, which is a lot of, you know, things that really are all about the, you know, the bottom line and not really necessarily about process and connection and creativity and integrity and these other qualities that are so important if we want to actually be happy, you know, as well as productive. But so I was, you know, going through a phase around that, and it wasn't until I was sort of really into the thick of it that suddenly my publisher actually said, oh, would you like to write an Isis Oracle? And everything in my being just, yes, I've been obsessed with ancient Egypt since I was a little girl. And I realized she'd already started working with me. And this is the thing, I think we might not be aware of the divine feminine in all of her forms, but she's very aware of us. And it's often, you know, when we're taken into those dark places where intellectually we think, oh, I've lost the plot, or haven't I got the hang of this yet, or why is this happening, and we can beat ourselves up. But actually, I see those things as kind of sacred feminine initiation for men and for women, because it's really taking us into a deeper place in our soul where we're kind of opening up to something that maybe we haven't learned yet, that we're kind of bringing through, that society might not really be able to support us in. So we have to kind of have the courage to step up and say, hold on a minute, how do I want to be? And that doesn't have to be an aggressive thing, but it's certainly, you know, an assertive thing. And, you know, tapping into the truth and finding more well-being, vitality, creativity that sort of comes from that. That's certainly been my experience. So kind of amongst all that, the Isis kind of oracle, and then I wrote some music for her and all sorts of things, but just started to kind of bubble up out of that, all of that stuff around empowerment and being true to the self.
And it's, I mean, obviously that's your personal journey, but of course creating something like a book or an oracle deck or whatever goes out all over the world, like your decks are sold, you know, like so incredibly all over the world. And I do think more women are searching for, in terms of that empowerment, what is my anchor outside of myself and my friends and, you know, stuff like that? What is my anchor? Like, you know, what almost can I kind of worship or believe in that feels like my kind of energetic cheerleader? So I think it's really, I don't know, for me personally, I'm just finding that connect, that renewed connection, because when with Isis, because when I, you know, when I was, you know, quite young, and I can't remember, but I reckon I would have been about 10, but, you know, it was when Wonder Woman was, you know, I mean, people kind of think, oh, Wonder Woman, oh, she's cool, she's just, she's that retro flying superhero. It's like, yeah, well, once upon a time, she wasn't retro, she was new, and it was a new show, and she was, you know, she might have come
I remember, girl.
You remember when that invisible plane was flying around, and that was the first time, and that was a high budget American TV show, and she was hotter than hell. But I remember that I at around about the same time I stumbled across this other TV show, which was about another what I thought was a superhero, but actually, it was a goddess, and it was a TV show about Isis. And she was, again, this beautiful-looking, dark-haired, you know, tanned American woman. But essentially, that TV series was around the concept of the, you know, the mysteries of Isis. And I just remember as a child just being, I loved this Isis. I don't know why. I just had this instant connection. But I just remember also thinking at the time, I don't don't think the budget, or it doesn't look quite the same as Wonder Woman. Yeah, I think there's probably about a difference of $1 million in terms of budget. Oh God, it was so low budget. It was practically Handycam and following this hot girl around, and it was so funny. But I loved her so much. Do you remember that show? Did you ever see it?
I didn't see it, but a friend of mine actually told me about it, not as vividly as you've described it, but she loved it as well.
It
strikes a chord somewhere inside of us. We can say, oh, it's just a TV show, but when you really feel it, there's this resonance, It's the goddess within.
Handycam
or not, this rock.
Oh, absolutely. It was just like, it's like, okay, let's overlook all of these things that you don't have, but this story and this mystery was just wonderful. But, okay, so just saying that, you know, Isis, I guess the interest has come back into my life, and as I said, I think, you know, a lot more women are kind of like exploring this goddess and this, you know, empowerment. But it doesn't just happen because we go, oh, I've decided I really like to be really empowered and I'd like to be a goddess and all that sort of stuff. It's still early days. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about too is, you know, like me and, you know, women all over the world, you know, I'm very aware that there's some very, very huge, huge, huge karmic energy playing out right now. And I mean in terms of, you know, the way women have been abused in the past, and the Harvey Weinstein stuff and all the Hollywood stories coming out, you know, recently with the Don Burke and, you know, there'll be more stories from the Australian media and creative industries of men behaving badly and that have been protected and all of that kind of stuff. And I guess, you know, it feels great and rewarding to go, finally, these bastards are being outed and now they're going through days and days of a shitty time that, you know, one or many of us went through, feeling nervous around certain men in the workplace, or, you know, being taken advantage of or being literally sexually abused. But I wondered, from a spiritual point of view, What are you sensing with all of this? Because it is very karmic. It is very much around men and women. What do you think, just as yourself, reading these stories and
yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it definitely ties in spiritually with the Isis story, which is very much about justice, like not vengeance, not human, you know, revenge, but this kind of divine justice where there is essentially, to my mind, a healing that kind of happens. And I think, you know, what you're talking about is really, we can say it's men and women, but I think it's more masculine and feminine. So it's one of the things with this kind of justice energy and with Isis, she's in no way anti-male. In fact, her story is really about healing and overcoming, you know, the character of the dark masculine, which is destructive and predatory and incredibly toxic, like just thinks that, you know, it owns and can do whatever the hell it wants to anyone and anything, which is kind of this energy that is being exposed in these stories that you're talking about. It's really wounded and very dysfunctional. So a lot of this kind of, you know, people stepping forward and stepping up and having the courage to kind of speak and maybe having this feeling of, like, love and support and encouragement of each other to speak up. It's also kind of this way that a different sort of consciousness, if you like, can come through for men and for women, because there'd be just as many men as women who would kind of look at this and just go, hey, that is so not okay on any level. So I think it's really important that we kind of look at not just gender, but that obviously that plays a role, but that we look at the level of consciousness within both genders. You know, it's like, where can we lift ourselves? Where can we honour truth? Where can we not be afraid? Where can we maybe have compassion for these people who are so messed up, but at the same time not indulge it and not say, oh, well, you know, they're struggling, so I just won't do anything about it. Like, we actually hold ourselves accountable to how we want to live and how we want our world to be. So I think overall, even though it's shaking things up and there's an element of chaos, it's a healing that's actually wanting to happen through this. Yeah. And I think, you know, we can choose how we contribute to that, you know.
Well, that's right. And that's where I think, because this is so big, what's happening, this expose and this healing and this retribution, it is so enormous. It's not just about Harvey Weinstein. It's not just about Don Burke or whoever else, you know, is being sort of put under the spotlight at the moment. It's so, so big. This is that potentially, you know, hundreds and thousands of years worth of the wrong thing being done to women. And so also what I'm conscious of is that it would be really, if we don't have any kind of mentor to go, okay, so what now? Now we're kicking them and now they're down. Do we just stay kicking them and just stay in this holding zone of anger, which doesn't sound healthy in any which way? How do we, and I'm sure there's a lot of women, and I actually see a few high profile ones that rightly so are leading the sort of the charge and the hatred, but I'm looking at them thinking, okay, you're going to have to wind that down at some point, or we're not going, or you're actually going to not be doing the right thing for women. How, you know, I guess, how do we sort of move past the anger once the retribution subsides a little?
I think that's such an important question. And I mean, it's come up in, you know, context of people speaking out in various, you know, political situations in the States. You know, it's something that comes up again and again. And I think, you know, there are a number of goddesses that kind of resonate with this energy of sacred rage, I would call it. And I think, you know, that has a purpose. It really does. But it's sort of, I think the problem can sometimes be that it can take on a life of its own. And we have to be careful that, you know, when we're tapping into the truth of our anger, that we actually are using it as a kind of compassionate, liberating, truth, you know, revealing force, which is, it's supposed to bring clarity. It's supposed to restore boundaries. It's supposed to be what actually allows us to step out of something that's not, you know, authentic and compassionate and truthful and helpful. So, but once it's done that, if we try to kind of stay in it, it can then start to consume, and it's not, it's no longer about purity. It becomes about punishment, and that's not our job. You know, I don't believe. I think we all have issues that we're working on, and it's sort of, sometimes it's really hard when someone has just been vile, you know, when the behaviour's just been so appalling. It's really hard to sometimes not just get in there and start pointing the finger and thinking, you know, I hope you get everything that's coming to you and whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a carrier of this sacred rage, I think the best thing you can do is to be truthful and to be honest, but try not to attach to it too much, so that when it's time to sort of shift from that into the next phase, which is sort of how healing happens, you know, by moving through the phases of emotion and truth, then you can kind of move on. And it's not about sort of thinking, oh, well, I have to keep holding on in case someone gets away with something. We kind of have to trust at some level that, you know, the anger does its job of revealing what's been happening, and then we move through the next process. But without sort of eventually coming to a place where we feel some sense of trust in the whole kind of way the universe works, I think we can become very afraid. And if we're afraid, it's very hard to let go of anger.
Yeah, because, and I think there's definitely, and I can totally understand it, and it is really early days of women. I'm sure there's a whole lot of women that have been abused and or just treated badly or bullied in the workplace by men that are probably still, I mean, because I kind of feel like that too. I look at this and go, is this really happening? I mean, it's almost like, it's almost so surreal. Some of the things that are happening in the world, including this exposing of all of this very bad male toxic behaviour, it's like, oh my God, is this actually happening? It's too good to be true, kind of thing. But I do think that we have to be. It's nice to be part of something big, especially when it is kind of like getting justice. But then I think you've got to be really conscious of you know, when you are sitting there on your own in your computer room or whatever, and you're looking, you know, you're looking at all of these stories and everything, if you're still feeling this feeling of like, go get him, and you still have this rage, I think you need to be really aware and honest about how am I feeling about this myself? Am I still really, really angry? If so, then I actually probably have to go and do my own work on myself and not just keep burying myself in this tsunami of hatred and media and stuff like that, because some, yeah. And then I guess it also goes to, and I again, I understand the distrust of a system that has let women down for so long in going, okay, they're under the microscope now. It's with the legal people. The victims have come out. Now I actually just need to go, that'll be dealt with.
Yeah, look, I don't trust the system one iota, but I trust the universe completely. And I think, yeah. You know, you can sort of understand that karma has its own intelligence and way of playing out. And I've never seen karma as a punishment factor ever. Always seen it, you know, as learning and evolution. And I think, you know, what you described before, you know, if you're sort of feeling like you're getting caught in something, whether it's this situation and there's a lot of anger and rage, and you know what? Totally understandable.
Totally understandable.
Right on the, yeah, you're right on the money when you talk about this very long history. And I mean, if something gets, you know, shoved down and bottled up for a long time, it's like a volcano when it, you know, it finally erupts. And so, you know, we have to honour that and have respect. And I do have great respect for people that have the courage to tap into the truth of quite uncomfortable and painful feelings. But if you're feeling like you're getting stuck or revved up, or you can't sort of, you know, tear yourself away from, you know, keeping checking on the media with, you know, to deal with it every 5 seconds, and it's starting to kind of take over your life, I really feel that is the moment when it's such a wise thing to actually say, hey, maybe I need to just separate myself for a moment and work on my own feeling content around this. Because I absolutely believe that when we work on ourselves, we do make a healing contribution to the greater energy of what's happening. You know, we all have a part to play in having a conscious response to the things that we see going on around us in the world.
Yeah, and I also think that women and men can also support women that are feeling enraged and grieving and all of the things that these stories have brought up for women. I think that we all need to be aware that, yes, it's great to be united as a big pack because we were just sort of kept down for so long. I speak like that because that is history. That is history tells us that. And just because a lot of these people are dead, to me they're not dead. I can feel their spirits, and it's never lost on me that all of this happened to these women, and they didn't live in, you know, they may not be, you know, they're not living in these times to see the fruition of all of this and the change and the karma. But I think we need to be really, really conscious and aware that, yes, we're all reacting to it at once because they are global stories or they're national stories, but I think we all have as individuals, and I think it is easy to be part of something bigger. It's harder to be part of something smaller, which is just you. And I think we all have to be really aware of how we're all feeling. And if you see a friend or your mother or someone that seems to be in this sort of slightly altered sort of anger space, or they are at the computer more, we need to try and we need to nurture them through this grieving or anger period, because they may be reliving all stuff that has happened to them on their own. This is not something that happened to us as a collective of women. This is something that happened to individual women, and we're all going to be responding differently right now through this anger and then hopefully healing process. And some of us will feel lost about how to seek that healing. You know, we have to look out for each other, you know?
Look, I absolutely agree. And I think this is sort of where that sacred feminine is really incredibly reassuring, because, you know, part of her instruction for us is the understanding that our soul, you know, our emotional intelligence, it does actually know how to heal, and it does actually know how to move through the stages. We don't have to kind of contrive or direct that. And I think, you know, reaching out to each other and try, you know, what you're describing is really, you know, be present, be aware, pay attention to what's happening now. Don't just get caught up in the, you know, media storm about whatever
the
latest. Yeah. And I think, you know, we can be aware of what's going on in the world. That's, you know, sometimes a helpful thing. But to keep coming back to, you know, what is happening in my little patch of consciousness, you know, in myself and with my loved ones around me, and how do I want to respond to that? And I think giving permission for feeling, but also really, you know, wanting to be present to the self and doing our own work. It's what changes the world. It really is. It's what changes, you know, instead of there being a kind of pack mentality reaction for good or for bad, we actually start to, you know, become part of this change where we're independent, we're capable of formulating our own thoughts and responses, and we can become sort of creative, like healing energies for each other through that process. You know, I really do believe that each one of us, when we're in the truth of our being, you know, we all have a really important role to play and a healing role, even if we don't think of ourselves in that way. I really do feel that, you know, we're here to kind of heal and support each other through being in the truth of who we are.
Yeah, and I think I think it goes back again to so many parts of the female, the feminine, divine feminine, or just being a female, have been sort of shut down. You know, there've been so many parts have been suppressed. So I understand that women are probably at a stage, you know, as a generic, you know, a generalization, I should say. Are wondering what they do have to offer, and with all of this talk of, oh, you know, empowered and goddess and right, we're not taking this anymore, I think there would be a lot of women kind of going, okay, yeah, that's cool, I'm cool to go with a bunch, but I'm not sure that I've got much to offer on my own. But I think that that's not true, and I think, you know, just because you have it on your business card, healer, has nothing to do with the fact that every single person, men and women, have the healer within them, and that might literally just be something that you bring to the table because you saw someone else reacting a certain way. That is you offering something that, you know, it could be healing to that situation and that person in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, this is astounding to me, actually, that people would think that way, you know, women or men, but would think, oh, I'm not sure that I have that much to offer. Because, I get that people get into that, you know, and if it's reinforced, and a lot of, you know, what's happening with these situations, especially in media and entertainment industry, like things are being cracked open where it's been really quite, you know, suppressive and dominating and controlling and very vicious towards the fullness of being and the soul. I mean, the whole...
So vicious.
You know, these kind of... Yeah, just any industry that's so dominated by, you know, image and surface, you know, is going to, you know, be pretty toxic to, you know, to maintain a sense of what is real in the inner self, you know, that actually has value. And I think sort of, you know, what we're talking about is really about starting to tap into with some awareness of what it is that's within. And it seems like such an amorphous, you know, hippie sort of thing to talk about, but it's the stuff that's real. It's what, you know, when we see someone, it's actually what we are attracted to. It's when we speak, it's what actually comes through our voice, not just the words, but the kind of energy underneath it, and why we feel the way we feel with certain people. It's like we're always sensing this inner energy, which kind of emanates out almost like a sun that shines out of each one of us. So to me, everyone has their own unique kind of spiritual signature and perfume. It's like we're all, you know, you don't just need one vitamin in the body. You need all these different types that all work together in different ways and all have different functions. And I think human beings as individuals in the collective and on this planet are kind of similar in that regard. We all have something that's just, you know, about us. That, you know, we have things in common, and then we have these unique little signatures, and we might think that they're embarrassing, or, you know, or we don't even know that they're there. We're so unaware of it, and yet it still, you know, it plays a role. And some of the goddess energy is really about, I think, just sort of discovering that and reconnecting it and learning kind of more about who we actually are. And that's sort of, you know, it can seem a bit intimidating, but it's mostly, there's some undoubtedly some bits where you go, well, you know, don't know if I really needed to know that about myself, but mostly.
Oh, God. Oh, if only I could write a book about all the uncomfortable slash slightly confronting things I've learned about myself. My God. Oh,
that's
gee.
That's good. That's part of
but
the
you know what,
but
they're there.
Beautiful, the other stuff, though, you know, when you go through
yes,
that, the beautiful
I have,
things that you discover.
I have definitely learnt some beautiful things about myself. And I just want to tell you about a beautiful moment because we're sort of getting towards-ish the end of this wonderful conversation about our wonderful Isis. So I went to Egypt in July. I don't know whether your manager, Richard, told you this story. I was going to send you a photo of it and I never got around to it. So, but I know that your ability to visualize is just extraordinary.
It's quite strong, yes.
Oh, it's quite, I mean, it's just out of this world, literally. So I went to Egypt in July. I've had the busiest year of my entire life and there has been so many things in there that have been the toughest things that I've ever had to deal with in my life, and some of them have been the best things that I've ever had to deal with in my life, including, I think, my relationship with myself and discovery and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I did get to the halfway mark in July, leading up to July, and I thought, okay, well, it's been the first half was probably more difficult than the second half, and I kind of knew in my heart that I needed an adventure, a holiday, and an adventure that was going to be a little kind of like just sort of a little mind-blowing kind of thing. Do you like that? A little mind-blowing.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit cancels each other out, but whatever. Anyway, so I decided I'd always obviously dreamed of going to Egypt and, you know, if you bring that up, everyone goes, oh, no, you get blown up and blah, 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 blah.
No.
Well, you don't. Anyway, so I went to Egypt in July and I obviously my Isis connection and I've had your cards for quite some time was just sort of creeping up on me very in a nice little way. And I thought, oh, I wonder if should I take my Isis Oracle deck to Egypt? And I thought, but if someone goes through my bag, are they going to think that that's a deck, you know, that symbolizes that I worship the terrorist group? I mean, surely they'll look at the pictures. And, of course, I'm going through all of this bullshit in my head of getting pulled up at the, you know, at the airport and getting done for my Oracle deck. But I thought, no, stuff it. If they don't understand, that's totally ridiculous. And I'll just ring Alana Fairchild and just say, could you speak to these people about this deck and assure them that I'm not part of, you know, the terrorist group? explain yep. what ISIS is to this Craig, the airport security guy in Sydney. Anyway, within the first 2 days, we end up at the you know, the pyramids of Giza, you know, the big pyramid. Yes. And yes, I'm there yes. with two friends and this lovely guide and we go, we step out of the cart and then I'm walking towards the pyramid and suddenly I remember, oh, shit, I've forgotten my Isis deck. So I run back to the car. I'm not telling anyone else what I'm doing because I'm thinking, oh, look, this Egyptian tour guide's not going to understand what I'm doing. My friend was really sweet. She will, but she's in her own zone going, oh, my God, pyramids. Anyway, so I ran back to the car. Got my deck, put it in my pocket, ended up walking up the pyramid, inside the pyramid. Well, I nearly, that was just the worst experience ever. I couldn't breathe. I had to run out of there. I was about to have a panic attack. I was that claustrophobic. So that wasn't great. Yeah, that wasn't great. That wasn't great. Anyway, as we're standing up, we come out and I'm like, oh, that wasn't great. And I'm probably green. They go, oh, okay. So, you know, take your pictures. Now we'll go back to the car. Well, I decide that I need to do a reading outside the pyramid with your Isis deck. And I thought, I wonder, I mean, I've used this deck down at my park in Elwood, you know, a million times, and I get some incredible messages from Isis when I'm like, got a problem or whatever's going on. And I think, what is the energy going to be like doing a reading using this Isis Oracle deck when I'm in her friggin' hood? And I'm so then, I've got bloody camels going past and I've got people trying to flog something from me. Like everyone's trying it on and I'm trying to create a bloody sacred space in front of this massive pyramid so I can have a chat to Isis and do my reading and everyone's up in my grill. Anyway, so finally I said to the tour guide, please, give me a moment. Very theatrical. Please, just give me a moment. Yeah, because he's going, oh, do you want this? Do you want that? So I stood there and I thought, oh, Jesus, I'm going to have to do this quicker than normal. So I stood in front of the pyramid and I shuffled my deck and I'm saying to Isis, I'm saying, so Isis, here I am. I'm in Egypt and I've come here to connect with you and I don't really know what to ask you, but I'm just so excited and I just want to connect with you. So please, can you just give me a card? You know, flick out a card from the pack that's got a message that I need and I need to know from you. And of course, this card flicks out and I pull it out. Anyway, I'll read it to you. It's the Knot of Isis, and it says, part of your spiritual destiny involves a special relationship with the goddess. This means that not only do you have the important spiritual task of helping her thrive in this world, but you are afforded her power, protection, and abundance too. You are now deepening your connection to the goddess.
Oh, what a perfect thing at that moment.
I couldn't believe it. I took a photo, and I will send it to you. I took a photo of the picture on one side, which is the Knot of Isis, and my little chewed fingers holding it up. I'm no hand model. And I'm holding it up with the pyramid in the background, and I took a photo, and I just... Oh, it was such a lovely moment. And then, of course, I turned around and there were all of the Egyptians trying to sell me things. And I'm like, excuse me, my work here is done. I've just had a chat. Yeah, excuse me, coming through. I just had a chat with Isis. It was so beautiful. It was just it's you know what? If your intention is to have a connection with her, I honestly think that anybody can do that. It's not... You know, it's not some, you know, superhero kind of psychic sort of thing. You just can. And it's been my intention to increase my connection with her. And it's exactly what I got. So thank you for creating those beautiful decks. All right. So we've got to go now. And my final question to you, Alana, is what do you wish more people, especially women, would know about the real Isis?
That she is alive within their soul already.
Oh, that's so good. That's a great little statement. Thank you. I urge anyone to look up Alana Fairchild. You can also either her website or the Blue Angel Publishing website to have a look at, you know, her 400 decks. No, how many decks do you have now? There's not. No, that sounds really terrible. It sounds like, you know, you just get off the phone and you'll go, hey, I'm just going to go and bang out another deck. They're all very, a little bit more thoughtful than that. But they're so beautiful and they give so much joy and connection to people. So I really thank you for your role in the world, Alana.
Thank you, and likewise, beloved. It's beautiful that you're, you know, so courageously sharing this gorgeous message of wisdom and openness. It's really beautiful.
Well, I come from a long line of crazy people, so, you know, the fear of people thinking I'm mad, it just ain't there. Just not a thread that's in me.
Totally resonate with that, yeah.
Nor have I ever really worried about going through security gates, you know, with a pack of ISIS cards in my back pocket as I enter Sydney and Egypt. You know, just not a problem. Thank you so much, Alana.
It's a pleasure. Lots of love. Take care.
Lots of love. Bye. If you enjoyed this episode of The Wise Guides and want to hear more, you can subscribe to the show. And if you're feeling generous, we'd love you to give us a little rating and a review. Next week, I'll be taking you all the way to Cairo to meet up with a woman who accidentally became an activist during the 2011 Egyptian Revolution, as women trying to protest in Tahrir Square were being mob raped and assaulted. Her story is both inspiring and surprising.